Next is a class in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, recorded on August 27th, 2000, in Innisfail, Ireland.
We're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, Chapter 25, The Residents of Varanasi Become Vaishnavas. So last week, where we left off, actually this chapter is connected to a chapter in Adi Lila, chapter 7, where Lord Chaitanya debates with Prakashananda Saraswati about Vedanta Sutra. And in the end, the Mayavadis accept Lord Chaitanya and they take prasadam together. Then now it picks up here again because he's in Varanasi again and he's holding a tumultuous kirtan at the temple, and the disciples and Prakasananda Saraswati come forward. A disciple of Prakasananda, who is very learned, he begins to speak some verses in favor of personalism against Mayavadi philosophy, and he's picking very select verses from the scriptures and giving very good arguments. Against the Mayavad philosophy. So this philosophy is very offensive. It takes Lord Krishna's body as material and devotional service as material activities. And it's very continues to this day to be very prominent philosophy in one form or another. You may have heard how in early memories of Prabhupada in 1966, one of the devotees, I think it was Hayagriva, said that when Prabhupada first started talking against the Mayavadis, and there was so much about them in his talks, we wondered, who are these people, these Mayavadis? I've never seen a Mayavadi. It must be some small clique of people in India. But then when we understood what he was saying, we understood that we were probably half Mayavadi or more. And there's so many. Anyone who is an impersonalist is a Mayavadi. In fact, last week I asked if anyone would like to give a personal story of how they were Mayavadi and came to Krishna consciousness. Bhagavat was here. She said it was no problem. She was a personalist. But then she thought about it and sent me a letter. And it was a more complicated situation. So maybe later today I'll ask for any Mayavadi stories. Usually, there are some people I know, some devotees have said they were really sophisticated in terms of studying Indian philosophy and thinking that the Brahman was the absolute. And then they went to a temple and a devotee told them, oh no, it's just the opposite. The Brahman, that comes from God, Krishna's body. And just with that explanation, their whole Mayavadi philosophy crashed apart. So there are different stories. I have a couple of very small tape excerpts I'd like to play. One of them supporting what I just said about how widespread this philosophy is. Hey, yeah.
It is the duty of God. It is created by material condition. This is Buddhist theory. At the present moment, the whole world is going on this Buddhist theory that under certain condition, the matter develops its living force. No.
Just that one phrase really struck me, that he said the whole world is going on under the Buddhist philosophy. In terms of a nominal religious membership, Buddhism isn't that big. Christianity is bigger, I think. Islam is very up there. But I take it in a different way. If you take the Buddhist philosophy as being everything is nothing, then it's more than a nominal philosophy. I know it's very popular in New Age America, some form of that Buddhism. And Hinduism, too, of the Mayavadi is very popular. This is more of the same.
fall. They say, this thigh is abhakta, not manifest. But it has also a fall, ground fall, the universe. Without form, there is nothing. Everything has form. The so-called impersonal, that is also form. If we go to the ocean, and you will find a form, a big circle, that is also form. How can you say there is no form? So this formless, nirvishesha, you offer your prayer, nirvishesha sunnabhasi. This is all foolishness. Zero.
Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pastita Desitarani. My obeisances unto you, O spiritual master, servant of Bhakti, said unto Saraswati, you are so kindly delivering these Western countries which are filled with voidism and impersonalism. So this pranam prayer was made by Prabhupada. There are two. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. That's a standard one for all gurus, and you just insert his name. But the second one, he wrote it up. What could we do? We didn't know who he was. We didn't know Sanskrit. Around 1967, he made it. So out of all the different things he might say, he described himself as, one, a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and two, that he was preaching to bring us out of Nirvishesha Sunyavadi. Nirvishesha refers to the Mayavad, as taught by Shankara, that there is an absolute, but he has formless, and Shunyavadi means nothingness is the ultimate. We're praying like that to Prabhupada. Okay, here's the next verse at Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a quote from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of all causes. He is past, present, and future. And he is the movable and immovable. He is the greatest and the smallest. And he is visible and directly experienced. He is celebrated in Vedic literature. Everything is Krishna, and without him there is no existence. He is the root of all understanding, and he is that which is understood by words. Purport. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:46-43 was spoken by Uddhava when he came to pacify all the inhabitants of Vrindavan during Krishna's absence. So we have to appreciate Krishna consciousness both by philosophy and by feelings. There's that saying, philosophy without sentiment is dry speculation, and just the opposite, religion or sentiment without philosophy is sentimental or can be fanatical. We need both. So this is a verse of devotional philosophy that Uddhava spoke when he went to Vrindavan to bring letters from Krishna and to tell everyone there that Krishna was thinking of them and would return. I have a Krishna book description of that, Uddhava speaking these words. It is stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Krishna saved the cowherd boys from the blazing fire, forest fire, within a second while their eyes were closed. Similarly, Uddhava advised the gopis that they could be saved from the fire of separation by closing their eyes and meditating on the activities of Krishna from the very beginning of their association with him. From the outside, the gopis could visualize all the pastimes of Krishna by hearing the descriptions of Uddhava, and from within, they could remember those pastimes. I once taught a seminar about visualizing different scenes from the Krishna book with our different senses. But in the case of the gopis, they can actually remember from experience things they did with Krishna, times they were with him, and Uddhava was leading them through this guided imagery visualization. From the instructions of Uddhava, the gopis could understand that Krishna was not separate from them. As they were constantly thinking of Krishna, Krishna was also thinking of them constantly at Mathura. Uddhava's messages and instructions saved the gopis from immediate death. And then when he reads Krishna's message, it's also very philosophical, such as saying that Krishna is everything, so you shouldn't feel separate from him. If you think of him, he's there. If you say his name, he's there. Everything is Krishna. But at another time, when Lord Chaitanya was speaking in the mood of the gopis, expressing sometimes anger with Krishna in their separation from him, they referred to this very talk, and they said, "And we remember you sent us Uddhava, and he spoke this Jnana Yoga to us. Do you think that this is satisfactory for us?" So they didn't like those talks. They wanted Krishna, not some high-flown philosophy that Krishna is everything. So that's another understanding by the gopis of that philosophy without Krishna, who cares for it? In their case, a philosophy of they want Krishna in person. Now this Prakashananda Saraswati disciple is speaking, "O most auspicious one," this is another Bhagavatam verse, "for our benefit you are worshipped by us. You manifest your transcendental form, which you show to us in our meditation. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, the Supreme Person, and we worship you, whom impersonalists do not accept due to their poor fund of knowledge. Thus they are liable to descend into a hellish condition." Purport, this is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.4. This was spoken by Lord Brahma. It's the chapter, Lord Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. So it's similar to the previous verse talking about remembering Krishna in meditation and worshipping him. So different than the Mayavadi. They don't say concentrate on a person, Krishna. They think Krishna is just another material person. Now he quotes now Bhagavad Gita, "Abhanjanati mam mudha manushim tanamasritam parambhavo agjanatam mama bhuta maheshvaram." Fools disrespect me because I appear like a human being. They do not know my supreme position as the cause of all causes, the creator of the material energy. Now he quotes another Bhagavad Gita verse, 16:19. "Those who are envious of my form, who are cruel and mischievous and lowest among men, are perpetually cast by me into hellish existence in various demoniac species of life." Now the student speaks something in his own words. "Sutrena parinamvad taha na maniya vivartavad stape vyasa branta baliya." Translation: not accepting the transformation of energy, Sripad Sankaracharya has tried to establish the theory of illusion under the plea that Vyasadeva has made a mistake. Purport: for further explanation of this verse, one may refer to chapter 7 of Adi Leela, verses 121 to 126. So this is Vaishnava philosophy versus impersonalism. And these are two important points. Vyasadeva, throughout the literatures, he teaches what's called Parinamvada and explains the existence of the Supreme Lord and his creation and the living entities by this. And that is that the Absolute Truth, he has inconceivable, unlimited energies. And with these energies, he creates the universe. He creates he doesn't create the jivas, but the jivas are expanded from him. But although everything is done by his energies, He remains as a separate person, the Absolute Truth. So Shankara doesn't accept that. And he puts forward a theory of his own. By not accepting it, that means he says, oh, Vyasadeva is wrong. Just to say that Vyasadeva is wrong is so audacious. So he has this theory called the Vivartavad, the theory of illusion, by which he explains the Absolute Truth, the creation, and the living beings. So he says, the Absolute Truth cannot change into some energies or into jivas, because by definition, Absolute Truth means one. So the truth of the matter is, everything is one, and it appears to be different by some illusion. That we take an idea that I have a self and you have a self, and the Absolute Truth is in any way different from us. So enlightenment means to return to our original understanding of oneness. This is his theory. The theory of the Vaishnavas can be supported just by some good examples. For example, a factory owner, he has so many things going on in his factory and so many products and people are working there, but he exists separate from it. Or a father can and a wife, they produce sons and daughters, but they remain as people. We don't disappear by this diffusion of energy. If this can be done even among living beings, why can't it be done on the Absolute? Prabhupada used to give that example of the sun, which is giving out unlimited energy for so long, but it's not getting diminished. This is the real position of the Absolute Truth. Now he says, Sripad Sankaracharya has given his interpretation an imaginary meaning. It does not actually appeal to the mind of any sane man. He has done this to convince the atheists and bring them under his control. Purport. Sripad Shankaracharya's propaganda opposed the atheistic philosophy of Buddha. Lord Buddha's intention was to stop atheists from committing the sin of killing animals. Atheists cannot understand God. Therefore, Lord Buddha appeared and spread the philosophy of nonviolence to keep the atheists from killing animals. Unless one is free from the sin of animal killing, he cannot understand religion or God. Although Lord Buddha was an incarnation of Krishna, he did not speak about God, for the people were unable to understand. He simply wanted to stop animal killing. Sripad Shankaracharya wanted to establish the predominance of one's spiritual identity. Therefore, he wanted to convert the atheists through an imaginary interpretation of Vedic literatures. These are the secrets of the Acharyas. Sometimes they conceal the real purpose of the Vedas and explain the Vedas in a different way. Sometimes they enunciate a different theory just to bring the atheists under their control. Thus it is said that Shankara's philosophy is for Pashandis, atheists. Is Rishabha here? Yeah. He brought up the question last week. Why didn't the Lord do this in a more congenial way? If his purpose was to wean the people away from Buddhism, why didn't he send an incarnation who had a different program rather than this one that creates another bewilderment, gets the people to stop eating meat and teaches them that everything is impersonal? I said that, first of all, whatever he does, we shouldn't try to reason it out that he could have done better. But also, he wanted to bewilder people, because there are people who they're atheistic by nature, and they desire to be like that. So Krishna sends them a cheater. Even today, different cheating yogis, they're circulating around. We might say, why is this happening? But it's to let people get their nefarious desires fulfilled. So there's all this facility for vice and bewilderment in the world. But the people who take to it, they get the reaction. So you should try to understand the secrets of the different kinds of acharyas. Jai Radha Govinda. But basically, we accept it. I remember I had a devotee friend who had a Jewish lady friend. I mean, she was really into the religious philosophy of Judaism. So through her devotee friend, she was learning about Krishna. And she asked me in a challenging way that I'm learning about Lord Chaitanya. And the philosophy I hear is that he wanted to know what Krishna felt in his relationship with Radharani. So he took this form of Lord Chaitanya. So this implies to me a certain inability on Krishna's part. Why couldn't he understand Radharani's love and his own attraction to her? Apparently he's not completely able. I said, he is able, and he did it. And this is how he did it. He did it as Lord Chaitanya. So he found for himself the perfect means to understand Radharani's love. Although we hear in the scriptures it says, wanting to know what is the bliss of Radharani, and wanting to know his own attraction, which he could not know, he had to take the position of Radharani, which he did as Lord Chaitanya. But there's no inability implied there. It's just ecstatic love of God, and done in a way that makes all the devotees more ecstatic, because we see Lord Chaitanya, whose pastimes are so wonderful. We've been reading Chaitanya Bhagavat the last two afternoons, and there's so much ecstatic love of God there. So it's foolish to say that Krishna should have figured everything out without becoming Lord Chaitanya. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Yes?
It's just a question about Buddhism. Apparently, Buddhism has become quite fashionable now. People in America have taken to it. But the incarnation of Buddha that we hear about, as Prabhupada was talking about, mentioned in the Bhagavatam, is not the same Buddha that I Gautama Buddha. So is that the same? Is Gautama Buddha, is he following the same philosophy, or is it the same philosophy?
That point is not very clear. About Gautama Buddha and the Buddha in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Prabhupada, he seems to be saying that they're one. And when I was writing my book, Journal and Poems, I just started with that assumption that they were one. And I thought I would write about him by reading from his books and show that he was against animal killing. So we got a lot of his books written in the original language, I forget what a language it is, that he spoke in. It was some local language in India. And there was a whole society that prints his books in that language. I started reading them. I found very few references to animal killing. So then I spoke with Bhakti Charu Maharaj about it. And he said, that's the first time I ever heard this idea that they're different. He said that the Bhagavatam Buddha is not the same as the other Buddha. He said he heard it from Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother. He said, who is usually accurate in these things. So then I stopped writing about it. I got confused. And now another thing has come out. A book has been published by Prabhupada's initiating sannyas guru, Keshav Maharaj. And he directly says they're not the same. And he has all these essays and proofs as to why they're not the same. Well, it does seem for his preaching purposes, Prabhupada kept it simple, and that we can think back that there was a Buddha, he existed 3,000 years ago, he was predicted in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he came and he taught against animal killing. So I'm satisfied to speak on that, and not cast any further doubt. But since you asked me, there's that background to it. History books and religion classes say 3,000 years ago, and he appeared, he meditated, and one thing that's always the same is that he was a Kshatriya prince. He went out of the, he went out, and Prabhupada tells this story. One day, for the first time in his life, he went outside the palace with a chariot driver, and he saw a person with disease, an old person, and a dead person. And to each one, he said, "What's that? What's happened to him?" And the chariot driver truthfully told him. And he said, "Well, that happened to me." And he said, "Yes, it happens to everyone." And so then, out of compassion, he tried to save everyone. And he sat under this Bodhi tree in Gaya, not the same Gaya where Lord Vishnu's lotus feet are, but near that. And this is a place where even today Chinese and Japanese people go. They fly into India and then they go out there. And under that tree, he sat for a long time and meditated, and his enlightenment came that all reality is suffering and reality is caused by desire. So we have to just practice renunciation and loving kindness and break the chain of birth and death. So that teaching is sort of common to whatever Buddha you have. For some reason, I was looking through the dictionary for another word, I think it was yesterday, and I saw they had a picture of Buddha. I looked at the definition, and it said, first it said Gautama Buddha, and when he appeared, and then it said any number of Buddhas who appear after him, they also can be called by that name. I know there's one very popular Buddha in Japan, his name is Amida, and they chant just his name, Amida, Amida, Amida. And then there was a third definition, so... But the philosophy was all the same, like I just mentioned. Just cut the circle of birth and death by eliminating material desires and to be very kind to all living beings. So, as far as I would like to always just take what Prabhupada has said, and if somebody says something else, to say, well, that may be. But, I feel satisfied to speak to any audience just to say what Prabhupada said, not to get into, oh, there are actually two different Buddhas. In fact, I said I asked Bhakti Charu Maharaj, but then we asked one god brother of Prabhupada, he said they were the same. We asked another one, he said they were different, and it was going around like that.
So when you say our Buddha appeared 3,000 years ago?
The Buddha in the Bhagavatam. Yeah, and then there's that point that Prabhupada likes to bring up, that he was predicted before he appeared. That's an important point.
But they also say Gautama Buddha also, in Buddhist religion, they say that Gautama Buddha appeared 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, right. Yes. Here they are when they join the Sankirtan movement, then they get into it. There's all the Mayavadis dancing with Lord Chaitanya. But before then, I don't know if they have any kirtan. Mostly I hear of them sitting facing walls, and whatever comes in your mind, just let it go. Anyone here was a Buddhist? Did you have any singing and dancing?
Not really. No, I mean, I didn't get into it really, really full on. You know, I read some of their literature and stuff, and I just found that, you know, there's like, he says there's loads of Buddhas and there's loads of Bodhisattvas, but they're all, again, emanations of Buddha. So, although they may have been individuals in their own right, they still carry the same potency or lineage or an aspect of it as the first Buddha. So,
yeah.
It kind of made them, you know, one and the same in a way, but I know I found that a lot of their principles and practices are quite similar to Vaishnavism, that they just do it under the umbrella of Buddha instead. You know, when they get into it and you know, they get beyond the sort of going to the temple once a month or whatever, and they actually live as a monk, that there are quite a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
And it's just that maybe, you know, because it's you recognize, the Krishnas recognize Buddha, and all Buddhists are doing that, but they're kind of, they're maybe just coming at it and then they're stopping when they get to Buddha rather than going as far as Krishna.
Yeah.
But then if he's an incarnation of the Supreme anyway, then maybe that's enough for them, you know?
Right.
I'll still kind of, I empathize with them to a point.
What we're reading here is that they taught something that was relevant for a certain time and not meant to be perpetually taken as the absolute truth. But that's a little difficult for people to handle. Why did somebody teach like that? Yeah, we can have heart-to-heart exchanges with any sincere religionists, and certainly including those who are on the Buddhist path, or the Christian path, or the Islam path. Yes.
Just two little things. One about the last question that was asked about the kirtan. I spoke with somebody recently who went to this temple where Lord Chaitanya went and preached in Varanasi, and they said that it's very interesting because you go in and they're preaching the Sankhya philosophy, but then at the end they all sit down and sing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Huh. So they kind of somehow or another brought kirtan into their thing, and I understand that a lot of what they're talking is very much kind of has Mayavadi tones. Mm. But then they were really shocked because at the end they started chanting. The other thing, I did a lot of, in my soul quest, I did visit several Buddhist temples and such to do some chanting going around, but one thing I found recently, I read an article where the it seems that Kali Yuga is certainly very much affecting the people that follow Buddhism as well. The main Dalai Lama now, he eats fish. So it seems that a lot has been kind of manipulated or changed over time. So some things have been affected in that way. But it seems that the teachings, like you were talking about, of the Buddha are there.
The Dalai Lama appeared in a McDonald's advert recently.
Do you have something to say, Vajana?
I was first because I saw a few times the Shabrapa said that two kinds of high spiritualists are impersonalists and Vaishnava. But
on
the other side, he was criticizing
and personally. Yeah, if you wanted to count up the different references he makes and what he's... I think there'd be a lot more that are strongly critical of Mayavadi philosophy than statements that say that we're both pilgrims on the transcendental path because of their covering over and the truth about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or as Prabhupada would sometimes say, trying to kill Krishna, and even approaching his Bhagavad Gita with the attitude of removing Krishna from it. So, he sometimes describes him in different ways. Let's look a little more from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The atheists, headed by Mayavadi philosophers, do not care for liberation or Krishna's mercy. They simply continue to put forward false arguments and counter-theories to atheistic philosophy, not considering or engaging in spiritual matters. Next verse. The conclusion is that the import of the Vedanta Sutra is covered by the imaginary explanation of Shankaracharya. Whatever Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said is perfectly true. Whatever meaning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives is perfect. Any other interpretation is only a distortion. In Chaitanya Lila, Lord Chaitanya, he's certainly, he's strongly against the Mayavadis. And we were reading yesterday, Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, that two examples of his attitude toward it. One is with Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya was older than Lord Chaitanya, so Lord Chaitanya always treated him with respect as a senior. And Advaitacharya felt bad about that. He didn't get affectionate dealings where he might be chastised or something, like the other devotees did. So he devised this plan where he began to preach a monism or a Advaita philosophy. And then when Lord Chaitanya heard that, then he gave Advaita his heart's desire by punishing him. I forget exactly how he did it. And then Advaitacharya was just so happy, he was jumping up and down. Obviously he wasn't a Mayavadi, but he had done that. And Nityananda sometimes accuses, in their funny fights, he sometimes accuses Advaitacharya of being a Mayavadi. Another case was Mukunda. He was the singer who sang these devotional songs. And during this period, when Lord Chaitanya was revealing himself to be Vishnu, a period of 21 hours, he was sitting on the Vishnu seat on the altar. And each devotee came up and they saw the form of the Lord. They eternally worshipped. They prayed to that form. And he asked them, what desire do you have? And you can have it. So he asked almost everyone to come up, but he hadn't asked Mukunda. And among the Vaishnavas, they knew Mukunda was a very wonderful, prominent Vaishnava, especially as a singer. So they said, my Lord, Mukunda's here. You haven't called him up. And he was hiding in the house waiting. And then Lord Chaitanya started speaking against him. Oh, I'll never call him up because he's so two-sided. Sometimes he praises me like with a rose, but sometimes he uses a mace against me. He's like a chameleon. He goes to different speaking forums. He'll listen to the Mayavadis and applaud that. Then he'll listen to the Vaishnavas and applaud that. I'm not going to see him. I will not see him for millions of lives. So as soon as he said that, I'll not see him for millions of lives, Mukunda came out from hiding and he jumped up and down happy, saying, I will. He just focused on that one part of what Lord Chaitanya said, I will, not the rest, not see him for millions of births. So just that he knew eventually the Lord will call him made him very happy. But the reason I bring it up is that Lord Chaitanya again was showing, if you go to Mayavadi lectures, you can ruin your devotional creeper. And quite a few incidents of that. There was another devotee who had a friend who liked to hear Mayavadi philosophy, and he wanted to introduce the friend to Lord Chaitanya, and he said, no, I don't want to meet with him. And the devotee said, why? We're Vaishnavas. Our faith cannot be broken by hearing from him. He said, no, he breaks my heart when he talks about Krishna. I cannot bear it. So it should really be distasteful to us to hear these things. If somehow we're cornered somewhere and there's a Mayavadi lecturing, we ought to get out of there. If you can't beat the argument, then just block your ears and go away. It can ruin your devotional plant. Because some of them are very sophisticated. Shankaracharya himself is. There's one godbrother, Garuda Prabhu. He is a Sanskrit scholar. And he was telling me, he studied Shankara. And he said his language is very beautiful, even compared to Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya. Very ornamental and very beautiful. And he described it. He said it's like riding down the road in a Cadillac car, and then all of a sudden you're in the ditch and crashed. If you read him, you say, wow, this is great, this is beautiful. And then the next minute you crashed. So the Lord put on quite a show when he appeared as Shankaracharya. And any learned disciple of Shankaracharya can also be impressive, especially if there's just a simple Vaishnava there who may not be so good in argument. Someone else? Yeah. He's one of the prominent acharyas of India. There are basically four that are mostly mentioned: Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, and then Lord Chaitanya for us. So, in terms of time scale, I forget. It's all after Christ, all AD, maybe 8 AD, something like that. And Indian philosophy now is kind of split up. The other three I mentioned, they're all Vaishnavas, and he's Mayavadi. So even now in India, it's sort of split up, two camps. And but in the West, unfortunately, if you go to any college, or for the most part, read any book on Hindu philosophy, you get the impression that the Hindus' religious belief is Mayavadiism. Just like Christianity, you get the impression that they accept Jesus as the Son of God and at the same time as God. So this impression is there. I even, in my dictionary, I looked up bhakti and it said, the process of devotion which leads one to the understanding of Brahman. So that means the dictionary, which is meant to be completely neutral, has defined bhakti as leading to Mayavadiism. So Shankaracharya is actually an incarnation of Shiva, but he's appeared in this world as a teacher. And he had a purpose to fulfill, because at that time Buddhism was very widespread, because it got the patronage of a worldly ruler, Emperor Ashoka. So he made everyone Buddhists, and apparently Shankara preached so vigorously that he replaced Buddhism with following the Vedas, but coming to an impersonal conclusion. Any questions? You're too busy translating.
Creation was different from God, but I was trying to explain the simultaneous oneness and difference. But you didn't accept that.
Was it the priest
Jeanette
in the car yesterday?
No, so you got me on both issues. But he was saying that, so it is the Krishna is this creation, but he's also separate.
Yeah. It may seem to be logically not possible, but it's inconceivably simultaneously one and different how he does it. But those ordinary examples can help us to understand how a person has energy, but he's also different from the energy. Then if he says the creation is different, where did it come from? It has to be connected to its creator. Yes.
It makes me something similar. If we say Krishna is everywhere and in everything, it takes us both personally and impersonally. So how do we interpret this in a personal way?
If we say that everything is Krishna, personal and impersonal,
yeah, like
he has an impersonal aspect.
No, in small things, even like with the same, well, I mean, I don't have to go to the temple because actually Krishna is also here. He's everywhere. He said, I don't have, or in maybe, I don't have to offer this because Krishna is
yeah, right.
here. He's, you know, something is it. How do we...
That can be done in a very advanced state.
Sometimes
but,
sometimes we can...
We shouldn't presume to do that. Working under the spiritual master and following what he taught us. It's true that Krishna is in everything, and you wouldn't have to go to the temple, or you wouldn't have to put the offering on a nice plate. You wouldn't have to say the prayers just like you learned them. But that only comes when a devotee is in a very advanced state and he can treat Krishna like that, like the way the cowherd boys and gopis treat Krishna, they don't treat him with that kind of reverence. The boys climb up in his back and the gopis in joke at him and make insults. So we should just follow whatever Prabhupada has set up for us.